We're back with another episode of the Inspiring Women in CX podcast, a series usually dedicated to real talk conversations between women in customer experience and technology. This series, we're putting some of our awesome allies in the hot seat too. No longer rehashing the same old conversations. In Series 7, you can expect plenty of healthy debate and provocative discourse as we challenge the status quo on CX and topics affecting women in the workplace. I'll be your host, Claire Musket, and in today's episode, I'll be talking to one seriously inspiring lady from right here in the UK, the CX Senior Transformation Director at Kantar. Her skill set lies in managing complex transformational programs that deliver tangible changes for businesses and their customers. She believes true CX excellence starts with a change in the very systems that exclude and marginalise women. In her personal life, she's an advocate for women's rights, particularly reproductive rights, as those are the foundation upon which many women can build their futures. Let me introduce you to today's inspiring guest, Eva Davenport. Hi, Eva.
Hello, Claire.
Welcome to the Inspiring Women in CX podcast.
Absolutely pleasure and privilege to be here. You know, I always question this moniker I have of inspiring woman, which is, I guess, a segue into our topic about imposter syndrome, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it is today. But yeah, we shouldn't be questioning ourselves when others think so highly of us. Why do we question whether or not that's the truth?
Precisely.
But yeah, welcome to everybody who's listening or watching wherever you are as well. And as always, we're just going to dive straight into this. So Eva, I'm sure our audience would love to know a little bit more about you. If you'd like to share a bit about your career journey and how you ended up where you are today.
Okay. And you know, actually, it's always interesting when someone asks you that question, because you can tell the story about 15 different ways, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on where you ended up. I'm in a very, very short sort of bracy. Hello, I'm Eva Davenport. I'm a senior client success director at Kantar currently. I have been here for the last 10 years. I am originally Polish. So I came to this country somewhere at the beginning of the noughties and started my career in sort of standard market research. And then sort of progressed through the ranks and have done loads of different methodologies and different disciplines, from brand to pricing to CX. And somehow in the last several years, starting with maybe, you know, CX that was sort of off platform, more strategic CX about 10, 11 years ago, to really getting into the CX, the modern CX, which is, you know, high volume transactional customer feedback, driving real change in organizations informed by customer feedback, really centering that customer feedback in conversations, both internally and externally, is what I've kind of ended up doing. So I work with a variety of quite large organizations. My passion is financial services, but I also work with travel. The reason I kind of smiled when I said financial services, because sometimes people feel like, you know, banking, financial services is not a particularly exciting topic, but money is such an emotive topic for most. And I love making a difference with kind of well-delivered CX in that particular industry. So that's a little bit about me.
Love it. Love it. And for anyone who is just listening to the podcast, you're really missing out, because Eva is always snappily dressed and today has the most amazing cat collar on. So yeah, you have to go check out the YouTube video too. So just to position this podcast today, this comes after an absolutely epic event that we held on International Women's Day at Kantar's head office, where we brought together 50 women from across the UK who came to watch the most incredible panel, of which Eva was one of our panelists. And our theme for International Women's Day and Women's History Month was actually not failing into the hashtag inspire inclusion, very performative stuff that was happening around International Women's Day. We were like, what's it actually going to take for women to really be included? And the reason we chose imposter syndrome as a topic was actually because of a recent report that we did as Women in CX. So listeners, for anyone who wasn't there,
We talked about the fact that women experience imposter syndrome in the workplace significantly more than men. So I think 62% of men versus 73% of women. But when we did our Women in CX Global Study 2023, we uncovered that 84% of respondents actually experienced imposter syndrome when they work in the customer experience industry. So we opened up the session talking about it being kind of unsurprising when customer experience is like the one department where we're asked to prove our value more than anywhere else, more than sales, more than marketing, more than any other team. That, you know, quite often we're in a position where we're working horizontally across the organization, but have zero ownership for any of the changes we're actually recommending that get implemented. A lot of the time we're struggling with senior sponsorship, you know, may not have a customer experience oriented CEO or top leadership team. So we might not have that presence or voice on the board. So when we couple the gender agnostic challenges of working in CX with gender bias and the reality of actually that women and minorities are othered in the workplace, that it's unsurprising that it has this like magnifying effect for women in customer experience. So today we thought we'd get together on this podcast to delve a little bit deeper into one of the questions you answered, which was really around this intersection with not only, I guess, like imposter syndrome, but like why we're experiencing it to this degree as women. And to build upon that, the panel actually concluded that, you know, we don't all have imposter syndrome. We're being told that as women, but actually what we're really experiencing is systemic bias. So I'm going to start with that question. Do you believe that the othering of women and minorities contributes to our experience of the phenomenon that is imposter syndrome?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And there's not just kind of anecdotal evidence of it, but there's actual studies around this. And I always like to start with definitions.
Please, you know, because, what is it? Yeah,
because, you know, when we talk about systemic bias, and it's so many things to so many people. And I like to start with definitions so we're very clear on what we're talking about. So forgive me, I'm just going to read it out, right? So systemic bias, so in systemic bias, institutional practices tend to exhibit a bias which leads to the preferential treatment or advantage of a specific social group, whilst others experience disadvantage or devaluation. This bias might not necessarily stem from intentional prejudice or discrimination, but rather from the adherence to established rules and norms by the majority. And I think the reason why I really want to get into this definition is because kind of talking about discrimination or bias, people can get very sort of defensive about it and kind of go, but I am not this, I am not that, and, you know, I'm an open-minded person, etc. And I think it's very important to note that there doesn't have to be malice, you know. You know, like discrimination of place doesn't come from a person wearing like a pair of horns, you know, and being, you know, sort of malicious or evil. It's very often by societal norms that sort of happen and everyone subscribes to them and doesn't question them. And it can happen in myriad of ways. I call it the kind of death by a thousand cuts, you know, where you go into your daily environment and you experience those either like little microaggressions from people, drawn to your otherness in any shape or form, whether you're the only woman in a very male environment or if you're the only black woman in a very white environment, or if you're a queer person in a heteronormative environment. And these could be where people self-censor around, you know, like very, very, very good example of this is like, you know, for queer people, you know, when it says, what did you do last weekend? And everyone's like, oh, well, I was out of my family, I was out of my boyfriend, I was out of my girlfriend. And then the person has to think, talking about their partner, whether it's okay to name the same sex partner in that conversation, right? It could be around religion as well, you know, where people are like, I don't want to talk about going to certain religious practice in case it outs that I am of that religion, and, you know, there is prejudice around it. So there could be so many of those, and we almost like enter those spaces, and very often like water to a fish, when you swim in it you don't know it exists, which is why there is also this phenomenon of often the minorities themselves, or like the discriminated groups, also upholding those structures, because A, they want to fit in, B, sometimes they're not even conscious that they've accepted some of those narratives themselves, and then they're perpetuating them themselves. So I think the important part here is that we all have a part in it. It's not malicious. You don't have to like bully someone in a meeting to perpetrate systemic bias. It could be about the time that you booked the meeting for. Have you booked across 9 a.m. where a lot of women take their children to school, because a lot of women are the default parent and carry a lot of the household and planning responsibilities, for example. Or in fact, there's like a bias against, for example, single women, where it's like, oh, well, they have nothing else to do. Yeah, so, you know, yeah. So you can work till 10 o'clock whilst I clock off at 5, right? And you're just going to pick it up. So, you know, it's complex, but yet there is lots of common sense to this. If you kind of go, right, am I just behaving from my perspective? Have I been curious enough about being engaged with how other people live? Mm-hmm. So in summary, that's yes.
And now for a quick word from one of our sponsors. We are proud to be supported by Kantar, the world's leading evidence-based insight and consulting company. Kantar CX helps clients define customer and employee experience strategies, better understand their customers via measurement, and in turn improve business outcomes, driving true commercial ROI. To find out more about Kantar CX practice, please visit the sponsor links on the homepage of womenincx.community. Now back to the episode.
Yeah, interesting. And I was going to say, for anyone who wasn't at the event, we did have like great representation on the panel itself. So we were like super conscious that like we only have like our own perspective and lived experience. So being able to include women that could speak from a racial perspective, sexual orientation, neurodivergence. And then there were all these other facets that we all shared as well then, wasn't it? Whether it was like motherhood or being single, but also age came up, like weight, body, like size, image, like these expectations that I think, just to drop into that, like conditioning that we internalize about what we think we're supposed to be. So I just wanted to pick up on like two of the points that you shared there. Firstly, yeah, like that initial awareness. Like I remember when I started to educate myself about intersectional feminism, it was like I felt this penny drop, and then I'd taken like the red pill and I was never going to see the world the same way again. After I became aware of what, I guess I'd also been so conditioned to just think to be normal, particularly in like marketing and advertising, and again, kind of like growing up in the noughties, experiencing, I think, just this absolute prevalence of like women's value being attributed so much to what we look like and how nice we are. And then working, you know, my way up in the workplace and experiencing, I suppose, as a young woman in business, that sense of, well, you don't know what you're talking about because you've only been here 5 minutes. Mm. Or being hushed in a room by my boss because they didn't feel it was appropriate for me to be talking about something. Or, you know, casual sexism or blatant sexism or perving, like in the workplace. And always thinking up until this moment where the penny dropped that it was a me problem. There was something I wasn't doing right.
Yeah.
And then secondly, sorry.
Yes, sorry. You know, actually, on that one, it's also an interesting one that when you're talking about sort of casual sexism, it's not only a you problem. Like you could even be told that actually it's not okay. Mm. However, it was your problem to resolve, which is why I think when we were talking about it at the time on the day in the room, like a lot, absolutely every single woman's nodding about like having to strategize around really poor behaviors, you know, where, like casual sexual harassment in the office in the noughties was particularly out of control. I think it was the second whichever wave of feminism was that at the time, that, you know, it was this whole concept that we're just going to be like men, we're just going to be like this, and you had to be a cool girl and just kind of, you know, it was almost like, oh, well, you
bantering with the lads,
bantering with the lads, and, you know, and kind of this, I'll give as good as I get, and all this sort of stuff, which actually exhausting, and the inauthenticity around it, absolutely sort of damaging, you know. And I really relate to what you say when you were like, when you found the moment where you went, oh, hold on a second.
Yes.
None of this is okay. Oh, Jesus. Like, I also have to say that, you know, like, I was perpetuating some of it. So, like, someone would say, no, I just had the suboptimal experience of someone. I'd be like, do you know what, actually, you just need to know how to deal with it. You know, you just need to be tough. And sort of, therefore, inadvertently okaying that behavior for a, like a younger colleague or a peer, where I shudder now when I think about this, that especially the naughties, naughties are particularly naughty, I would say, in that regard.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were making your second point and I interrupted you.
No. I think we're just agreeing. So that kind of point of like awareness, but then also that internalization that leads us to perpetuate the things that we want to stand against. And then the intersectional perspective for me was, I suppose I only ever really experienced bias due to my like gender and my age, to some extent my class when I first started out, because I went to a red brick university as like working class agriculture type background, where everybody else had been to like these really posh schools and spoke with like really amazing like posh accents, but I'd never experienced bias because of my skin color, my race, my sexual orientation or queerness. Like nothing really prepared me for that experience of that next step into like intersectional feminism and realizing, oh my god, I've actually got it easy. I've got like so much privilege here, where I guess when I got to start Women in CX, I was able to like hand the mic over to people to talk about their lived and shared experience, that I think has had like one of the biggest impacts on me is being able to hear from other people what it feels like for them, and that perpetuating the bias, I guess, like mission for me is like helping to educate more women about this reality. And I think we did a fantastic job over Women's History Month with our campaign and our events all over the world, but continuing to drive that. So I thought I'd like to ask you the question about how do we challenge systemic bias in and out of the workplace? What are your thoughts around that?
Oh God, you know, it's almost like, how do you solve this massive problem, right? I would say I'm an action woman. You know, sometimes to my detriment, I'm like, you know, let's just get on with it, right? I think I'll build on something you said, you know, where you said, despite me going to university, being from working class background, kind of entering this world, which was self-referencing and quite closed, and then having to sort of fit into it, but then realizing that there's actually like, you're actually a white woman, so you can pass. Okay, you have a probably like a regional accent, but you can soften it and you can fit in. And no one's going to other you because of your skin color, which you cannot hide, right? So you have some power. I think being aware of a power and not giving it away freely and being that bit brave when you are in a position of power, any power, is really, really crucial here. So it's very easy to kind of go, oh, it's all systemic, and therefore, what can I do? What can I do? Actually, we can act in multitude of ways to either call out certain behaviors, whether it is to educate politely, whether it is to stand up for those who have less privilege than we do. And I think the importance of those small steps cannot be underestimated. I think building allyships across, you know, across the kind of power structure. So, you know, in my career, I've met many male allies who are like, you are brilliant, and I'm going to really stand up for you. So then, you know, I was in the tent. So then I was able to go, right, let me open that door a bit wider to let more people in, introduce them, and make sure that they kind of benefited as well. So, you know, you can have people who have like pull up the ladders. The moment they get there, they're like, whoop, you know, and I'm sure that in our careers, we've met plenty of women doing that.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Yes, we have. Mm-hmm. And so don't pull up the ladders. Don't be that person. By the way, we women see those women, and like, you're not getting away from it. Scot-free. We see you, right? But also, don't feel powerless in situations where, find the moment where you have some power. And I think still, then there's a systemic piece where it's about educating, agitating, going to protests if you need to. Getting involved in women's rights organizations. I'm very involved in those from a productive rights point of view. The two posters behind me, the handmade says WTF Poland, and that relates to the abortion ban in 2020 in Poland. Those two, then the little cat, protest posters from Polish abortion rights protests. So like, I'm always
seeing you on Instagram with like your megaphone protesting,
always, yes. So you can do that, and you can, but also, you know, like, I'm typically a person that's quite out there and talkative. If you're kind of looking at this and going, oh, I couldn't possibly do this, all protest movements, all activist movements, all female movements need all sorts of people. If you are the quiet person that gets stuff done, if you're the person that kind of organizes everybody in the background, and you don't necessarily want to be on the barricade, you are still needed, right? So join organizations that are already doing it. Educate yourself in making sure that you kind of know your rights, and challenge as you go along, because it's not going to change from someone else telling us how to do this. It's going to change when we choose the path, right? So and we were laughing about this before the call, right? Use your power. And I always say I've got this slight sort of older woman privilege now.
Oh, yeah.
which is, I'm in my late 40s. And, you know, I worked very hard in my career. You know, and also had some privilege, like white privilege, and being a person that sort of, you know, is easier for some within systemic bias to be listened to. But I got here, and now I'm in a fairly senior position. Therefore, I have some power to call things out, to request change, to hold people to account. And we were laughing, I think, before the call about the fact that as women, we are either too young.
Yeah.
Then for like about 15 minutes, we are just the right age. And then we are too old, and ageism comes in, right? And then it's like, goodbye. So I'm working very hard on extending the 15 minutes, right? And I think everybody should be. But when you have that 15 minutes, work for it, right? Put that ladder down, get people up it, you know, like make sure that you are absolutely optimizing that moment. And, you know, the stern mum energy that now I have a child, and, you know, sometimes brings order to the room, you know? I also, another privilege I have is being Eastern European, which actually, it was something that was working against me a lot. And for anyone listening, especially my Eastern Europeans, many of you might find yourselves in what I share. Many of you non-Eastern Europeans might be like, oh, I never thought about this. And I hope you will think about that. But Eastern European women, although we have white privilege, we are very often objectified as sex objects. You know, I had jokes made to my face about male order brides being a good cleaner. You know, if you look at Eastern European women representation in the media, in the arts, we are usually represented as sort of mute abused sex worker in a gritty cop drama. That is literally the role we have.
Wow.
So I had to go against that. But we also have like gifts within our range. Like Eastern Europeans, we are, especially Polish people, we're typically very direct.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we get to the crux of the issue. So, you know, when you have like five British people around the table and they're like, and on the other hand, and, you know, should we consider this? And this would be interesting. I kind of very often just use my Polishness and go, guys, seriously, so we have about 50 ministers meeting. The outcome is supposed to be this. We know we're near there. What are the three next actions we need to do? You know, I'm not going to mess it back because I'm Polish. And everyone goes, oh, yeah. And actually, people welcome it. Mm. You know, on my feedback forms, I always get straight to the point, very decisive, speaks the truth, is very honest.
Mm.
And you can get the truth from her.
Mm.
And I think in all your otherness, you will have certain advantages versus the majority. You'll have those niche little golden nugget skills that that the Norman culture might not have. And you can contribute those and you can use those.
Love
so
it.
find your gold.
Sorry to interrupt your listening, but I just wanted to take a moment to tell you a little bit more about Wix. We're the world's first online membership community for women in customer experience. Our mission is clear, and that's to unleash the power of women to lead the future of human-centered business. Working in CX can feel lonely at times. We're often single-handedly trying to change the way organizations think and behave about customers. On our paid platform, you can discover a vibrant tribe of fellow female professionals, find support from knowledgeable peers, learn best practices from experts and practitioners, and be inspired to up your game through leading-edge CX and EX thinking. If you feel like you aren't making enough progress with your CX objectives, are unsure about what your next move looks like, or are struggling to achieve your career ambitions, you're not alone. To learn more about membership, see how women are progressing personally and professionally with the support of the number one community in CX, you can apply to join us today by visiting womenincx.community/membership. I really hope I get to see you there soon.
Just to dig a little bit deeper into just to the actions that you recommended. Mm-hmm. So you said politely educating and calling it out. Like, mm-hmm. And obviously in a corporate environment, we need to also maintain relationships. Do you have any like examples of or ways in which women can politely educate and politely call it out?
So first of all, I will call myself out here that I said politely, right? Because women are always supposed to be polite.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to moderate. When men are being aggressive, it's like, oh, well, it's easy to go get her. And, you know, he doesn't mess about. She just, you know, he gets what he wants. Yeah, aggression is kind of rewarded.
But when we do anything that involves any kind of emotion, we're just emotional, therefore worse leaders, or we're being bossy, or we're being demanding, or
neurotic, or,
neurotic,
you know.
Yeah.
What
can we do?
What can we do? So first of all, there are so many kind of ways of addressing this, but I always kind of take a step back when there's a moment in which you have to call something out. I always take a step back and connect it to business benefit, business money talks, business mm-hmm. talks. Our counter inclusion index shows that actually, you know, true diversity and true representation of opinions brings business benefits. Companies that are more inclusive just do better. Mm-hmm. They extend the market. And in CX is particularly important because if you excluding any groups from your customer base because your experience is not inclusive, mm-hmm. you're losing revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it will be hard called money and money talks. Mm-hmm. If you can make a business case around inclusivity, that's number based. Very often people are quite resistant to that sort of fluffy thing that people very often in positions of power kind of see this as some sort of value add nice thing that people are just doing. If you can evidence it, the better. I would say that my kind of interventions in this area ranged from literally calling something out on a call.
Mm-hmm.
And just being a bit brave and using your position power and personal power to do so in an assertive but clear way, boundary setting way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, this comment is not entirely helpful. Also, if something was done kind of sort of live in a moment and it triggered you, think about it. What was it and how you want to address it? So I had a situation at work in the last couple of weeks where there was a slightly sort of men-centering comments going on when we were organizing women, women-based events, and men were like, "Oh, well, what about the men?" And unfortunately, I'm not sure how many men will be watching this. I will say, for the benefit of women, if you ever saw like us women organizing and the men kind of going, "What about the men? When is the International Men's Day?
We've got one.
You've got one. It's in November, and you didn't do anything about it because you are very used to having women organize your lives and organize all the events for you. Therefore, it's very hard for you to all self-organize. I'm just now speaking there. That's how it is, my dear men. So if there's what about men, I had some sideline conversations around this. I kind of went, I'm not going to call it out on the call with loads of people on this, but I will say that that was suboptimal. We need to think about it slightly differently. By the way, this is the evidence why this matters. So, and this is how you can support. So call out, suggest improved behavior in a moment or when you've had time to reflect.
I was thinking about,
and use your allies. Sometimes, you know what, if it needs to be a man-to-man conversation, get an ally to have that conversation. I also had this where I was like, you know, actually this was suboptimal, X, Y, Z. Do you mind having a bloke-to-bloke chat about this to this person?
Yeah.
And they did, because good allies do that for us.
Yeah, and they start to normalize it not being normal to talk like that. I was just thinking of like my examples. It's just like when you catch that like whiff of sexism, for example, just say, what do you mean? What exactly do you mean by that? And just asking another question.
Oh yes.
Probe it, and like literally just get this shocked, stunned look, and quite often an immediate apology or I didn't mean it like that kind of look. And then when I've done it on LinkedIn, like a very famous example where this influencer was being really respectful to every man that commented on his post. And whenever a woman commented, it was like super dismissive. And it was just like a clear trend. Like, oh, I don't know what you're saying because you haven't used punctuation there. And I was like, and I called it out like on the post. And oh my God, all hell broke loose. He ended up taking the whole conversation down, coming after me in DM. And long story short, like appears every now and again, just like saying something about me calling him a sexist and then deleting it within about 5 minutes again. But yeah, like it's scary sometimes to do that. But rather than, I found it easier, I guess, like rather than like trying to go in with, you know, this is the logic and the reasons why that's not cool, just like individually or personally in the moment, just saying, what exactly do you mean by that? And just like looking.
do explain what you meant by this comment. It is actually quite sobering.
Yeah.
And can I just say, I am sorry this happened to you.
Mm.
And it is a frequent experience. And just listening to your story, I had like a proxy sort of stress of this happening to me. And because we women understand this, right? Where you call it out and suddenly there's a temperature change. And this person clearly has really taken it to heart to go into your DMs, to call you out, then delete it. There's some stuff going on for them. So
definitely.
Yes.
Definitely. It was actually quite scary. But yeah,
I think you're highlighting a very important thing.
The thing
I get
leveled at me most often about women in CX is that that must mean therefore I'm excluding men, and that therefore defeats the purpose of having a community that's gendered in the first place. And my riposte is always, look, when we don't need safe spaces for women to have conversations, I'll be totally happy for women CX not to need to exist. But right now we do. So jog on.
Claire, and can I just say, like, I think this is an accusation leveled at any group that sort of self-organizes within itself.
By men, though, by the way, not by women as often.
Yeah, I always think, like, we need safe spaces. It's a completely different level of conversation when the group can talk within a safe space. That's why you have, like, my mother and baby groups. That's why you have female entrepreneur groups. because we come up against challenges that are very unique to our group, whether it's Black women, whether it's women in CX, whether it's mothers of neurodivergent children, whether it's neurodivergent female entrepreneurs.
100%.
We all have certain set of circumstances in which we experience very specific kind of bias. And therefore, us being able to talk about any moderation, any self-censoring, any thinking about how that's going to land over there. And in fact, if there's going to be a man there sitting going, but what about the men?
Yeah.
And then we are ending up talking about men's issues rather than women's issues. Those spaces are precious and they need to be protected and they need to be supported. And we need to stand for those places, for those spaces to exist. And that's why I love Women in CX. One of the big reasons why it's such an empowering space when we kind of get into a room together, you know, the roof starts quaking because yeah. The female energy is there and women just connecting and emotional safety is a huge part of success in business.
I've honestly never seen anything like it, like at conference or at our meetups. Like the walls just all come down. Everybody's like immediately vulnerable, authentic. Like doesn't matter if we're in the same industry, in the online community even, you know, everybody is falling over each other to help each other answer a question. There's no like kind of competitive aspect. And in the majority of spaces, events, communities, there is always that kind of threat, and we just don't have that, which is amazing. I was going to say just a shout out to allyship as well. So Ian Golding, you know, very prominent man in CX, was you know, totally vocal at our conference saying, you know, he often got asked the question, why do we need women in CX? And then after the conference, at the conference and after, he said, you know, like specifically, I was there, I saw it, we need this. It's incredible. And you know, we'll talk to anybody out there saying that. He's like, whenever anyone ever questions that again, I'll be telling them. And we've been very fortunate, I think, to have some really high profile male allies supporting us. But look at the time, we've run out. So
I know.
We could, you know, we'll talk all day.
Such an amazing conversation. We could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, yeah. Right? But obviously no one's going to. You know, we don't want to take too much of the time.
I'll tell you what we should do. We should do the panel online. We should get the panel back together again so everybody can actually feel and experience the things that we've been talking about today. We've been referencing members of the panel, sharing yes. their experiences. Let's get something sorted around that.
Yes, let's. And that's one of the reasons, because we had such a brilliantly representative panel. In terms of race and also neurodivergence and sexual orientation, that the perspectives were so eye-opening.
Yeah.
And it's this, I'll call it the little kind of traps in your head when you've got conditioning, and the trap opens and you won't close again.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get so empowered to go, right, I'm going to stand up for this, or I'm going to do this differently, or I'm going to add value here with this new perspective that can actually make experience and CX better for absolutely everybody involved.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for coming on the show. If there was one final piece of advice or top takeaway you'd like to leave the audience with today, Eva, what would that be?
That's a tough one, you know, because there's so many different things. But I do think that one of the biggest takeaways for me over the years has been find the hidden gold of your otherness. Find it, embrace it, bring it out. It's a gift that you give to people. Mm-hmm. Whether it's your honesty, whether it's your storytelling, whether it's even those, you know, whether it's like a cultural context from which you come, where things are being done differently. And you can name it and you can use it and you can actually enrich people's lives with it. And the otherness can be a secret weapon, you know?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, so my final message from me is just keeping it real, right? So whether that's you not having to adjust the way that you are to try to fit into what society would deem normal, remaining like authentic in those spaces and finding spaces where you can truly just be yourself, Definitely, I think it's a big confidence builder. So that's it, Eva. Thank you so much. Thank you again to Kantar for letting us host our event at your beautiful shiny offices. Really appreciate that.
Absolute pleasure every time. Hoping let's repeat next year.
Can't wait. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Inspiring Women in CX podcast with me, Claire Muscat. If you enjoyed the episode and you don't already, please, please, please do drop us a like and subscribe to our channel. The bigger the following, the bigger the impact we can create on our mission to amplify the voices of women working in CX and technology. Well, that's all for now. See you next time.